Will Bitcoin adoption improve the monetary policy behaviors of the Federal Reserve? I submit that it won't. I do not see the incentive for the Federal Reserve to give in to anyone or anything, let alone Bitcoin. Be honest, Bitcoin is surely not big enough to be a threat to the US dollar. The United States is far more concerned with US dollar dominance being threatened by, say, the Chinese yuan. Bitcoin on its own has not destabilized anything. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a piece today, another one from Bitcoin Magazine. I've been on a streak of saving a bunch of the Bitcoin Magazine pieces. This one's actually from the withdrawal issue. So this was from the print magazine, and it's by George Kaloudis, titled "That Bitcoin Won't Fix the Federal Reserve." And it's funny because I actually agree with a lot of the argument in this piece, but I also disagree with it in a sense that I think that I have a different premise as to why and how the fixing of the Federal Reserve occurs due to Bitcoin. But I just thought this was a really interesting perspective and also a really entertaining article. So if you want to hear Guy's take, that will be after the read. And we will go ahead and just not waste any time and get right into the article. This show is brought to you by Nodeless.io. I genuinely do not know of an easier, quicker way, with no subscription, no KYC, just a simple setup an account and plug in your paywall, your charity, your fundraiser, your WooCommerce store, just directly implement the API with whatever it is you're doing, and then accept Bitcoin and Lightning. And you don't manage anything. It's like it's as simple as it gets. Check them out at my link, bitcoinaudible.com/nodeless. But you can find it right in the show notes, so you don't have to remember that. You should remember Bitcoin Audible, though. All one word, the name of this show, because it'll get you 9% off at coinkite.com. Snag yourself a cold card, some tap signers, some steel plates for your wallet backups, some sats cards. Throw a block lock in there too. You know, I just realized I think I have every single one of CoinKite's devices now. I think I do. I have multiple of a number of them. So don't forget to check them out at my link, bitcoinaudible.com/coldcard. And lastly, you know you need to be stacking sats with everything that you purchase with fiat. If you use a debit card that doesn't give you anything back, because that's how debit cards usually work, understand that you can get one that pays you sats back on everything that you purchase, a debit card, and you can pay for gift cards that give you even better percent back. Tons and tons of major merchants. I'm a big fan. I use it almost exclusively when I'm traveling. Amazon hasn't seen a credit card or a debit card purchase of mine in I don't even know how long, because I get 2.5% back on the Amazon gift cards. This is literally a fiat cheat code to get more sats. Guess where you will find the link? That's right. It's in the show notes. Check them out. With that, it's time to get into today's read. And it's titled, Bitcoin Won't Fix the Federal Reserve, by George Kaloudis. From the withdrawal issue, George Kaloudis discusses why Bitcoin's existence will not inspire responsible behavior from the Fed. A PDF pamphlet of this article is available for download. I will make the link available in the show notes. You are reading a print Bitcoin magazine, so you probably already like Bitcoin, which means you probably don't like the title or premise of what you're about to read, and so you already hate it. Alas, it is written and published. The money has been the way it is now for some time, and to be sure, people have been saying, well, hold on a minute, for probably that whole time. I wouldn't really know, I wasn't there, but there are enough Austrian economists who have been proselytizing sound money principles since before the Great Depression to suggest that at least someone was saying it. Without going too in-depth about gold as a monetary good, the United States went off the gold standard in 1971, and the US dollar is no longer backed by gold, and it likely won't ever be again. And in 1971, there were probably a bunch of angry and confused Americans who said, "Well, hold on a minute," and then asked, "Say now, is this good? And say now, what is money?" Then probably, quite naturally, "How does monetary policy even work?" And who knows how many people had those questions answered in 1971, but it's almost certainly at a rate lower than if the United States had gone off the gold standard for the first time in 2023. For better and for worse, the flows of information and disinformation in the 21st century are many leagues beyond the information flows of any other century. In admitting this, we do not submit that we are better than people in the 1970s just because we can get an answer to any question from a search engine or order countless books to our doorsteps only for them to collect dust on our bookshelves after posting a picture on social media about receiving the book. Rather, we submit something far simpler. Even the most cursory question can be answered with minimal effort. Being a generalist and understanding many things is easier now than ever. That's mostly good, but it of course comes with its own drawbacks. Cue the internet unintelligentsia who read one blog post about a topic to then claim expertise, hopping from hot technology topic to the next like a toad in a thunderstorm. And that's not to say anything about the quality of the information flows. In thinking about these information flows, we can easily see that this doesn't really have much to do with gold as a monetary good. Instead, it is about how the current availability of information is just that much more powerful for the individual as a tool to solve the problems we may have. And now we have Bitcoin as a companion for those information flows. Before 2022's inflation crisis, the last time monetary and fiscal policy was a main character in the United States was in and around 2007's Great Financial Crisis. We had optimized search engines and online bookstores then, just like we do now in 2023. So 2007 people could get their questions answered about monetary policy then, too. And so when interest rates were ratcheted down to zero and the Federal Reserve bailed out Bear Stearns, AIG, the mortgage-backed securities market, and just about anything high finance touched, the then Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke's credit creation-branded quantitative easing likely had more educated critics than, say, Paul Volcker did in the 1970s and 1980s. But even with those information flows, did we really predict what a zero interest rate economy would look like? Did we predict one of the longest U.S. equity bull markets ever? Maybe some did, but it would have been hard to predict that we would have allowed outrageous companies to not only survive, but to thrive, where burning operating cash flow was actually a good thing. For all its good in giving the masses tools, it was actually that same information flow machine that helped fuel this reality. Think about it this way. Internet and technology companies are supposed to benefit from large and powerful network effects to then eventually become incredibly valuable once they hit some sort of adoption tipping point or exit velocity. Some of these companies deserve it. Some do not. Zero interest rates nurture an environment where you can have basically unlimited attempts at deserving it, since exogenous capital is available so cheaply. While interest rates were low, funds, investors, and individuals with capital were starved for yield, and thus were willing to take more risk or accept lower returns on their investments. I won't name names, but burning cash was better than actually making money in the eyes of many of these capital allocators. If you were making money, then you weren't trying to grow, and if you weren't trying to grow, then you weren't trying to maximize yield potential for investors. So if you weren't burning cash, none of the brilliant private equity investors, venture capitalists, or growth equity funds gave you money. Maybe your stock price tanked and an activist investor had you and your entire board removed. Nonetheless, Bernanke's Federal Reserve seemed justified in the end. Inflation was basically low during and after the Great Recession, and the economy did survive. But the resultant decade and a half of 0% interest rates was never supposed to be a thing. Rates were supposed to come back up when the economy was, quote, ready. But the U.S. decided the economy was never ready. Hence the rise of so-called zombie companies, which can only exist in the low cost of capital world perpetuated by zero interest rates. Naturally, many posited it was these types of companies which would fail when interest rates increased again. But do you know what most people weren't worried about when interest rates eventually increased and the cost of capital went up again at the end of 2022? Yeah, that's right. Banks. Credit Suisse? Please, be serious. It would have been mostly hyperbole to suggest that banks would be the businesses that failed once rates were increased after being low for so long. In fact, syndicated loans held by banks tend to have floating interest rates, so it could easily be suggested that outstanding loans held on the balance sheets of banks would actually yield more nominally as rates went up as the loans collected more interest. Except, what ended up happening to some banks was quite literally the opposite. Banks held deposits, didn't lend them out, and instead exposed themselves to something called duration risk, which would normally not be a problem unless interest rates were increased 20-fold in the space of a year. That's what caused banks to fail. If you were the person who called the series of events that got us from the failure of Lehman Brothers in 2007 to the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and First Republic Bank in 2023, then I'd love to see the receipts. So here's the silly thing about our intertwined, information-rich system. The Federal Reserve cut rates because banks failed, which in turn caused banks to fail 15 years later. The Federal Reserve will ignore Bitcoin. It has to. This time around, we have Bitcoin. And so with our even better information flows in 2023, we can ask the all-important question, will Bitcoin adoption improve the monetary policy behaviors of the Federal Reserve? I submit that it won't. I do not see the incentive for the Federal Reserve to give in to anyone or anything, let alone Bitcoin. Be honest, Bitcoin is surely not big enough to be a threat to the US dollar. The United States is far more concerned with US dollar dominance being threatened by, say, the Chinese yuan. Bitcoin on its own has not destabilized anything. But you know what would be destabilizing? The Federal Reserve conceding to Bitcoin tenets and pointing to Bitcoin as a reason for its monetary policy decisions. The Federal Reserve saying, "We're doing this because of Bitcoin," would be a self-fulfilling prophecy and make the Federal Reserve and the US dollar immediately irrelevant. This is quite interesting because the Fed pointing at China as a reason for a monetary policy decision doesn't do that. It does the exact opposite. It's trivial. Of course the United States would defend its post as a capitalist economy to maintain US dollar hegemony against China's centrally planned economy and its yuan. Game theory and geopolitics suggest that it isn't much of a leap for most Americans to admit that China is a credible economic threat to the United States. Defending against China doesn't lend credibility to China because it is already a threat. Bitcoin, on the other hand, only has credibility as a threat to the US dollar in the eyes of few Americans, so it does take a leap in logic for most Americans to admit that Bitcoin is a threat to the US dollar. And so it follows that the US government or the Federal Reserve will never admit Bitcoin is a threat to US dollar hegemony, because that admission would grant Bitcoin status as a credible threat. But if we're further honest with ourselves, even though there's a threat to US dollar hegemony through China and Russia and others, the entrenchment of financialization makes that ever more unlikely. Look at the numbers. The US dollar is still the reserve currency of the world, and it probably will be for a while. What we do have now in 2023 is a Federal Reserve that is behaving boldly. A populace that is able to understand if they like or dislike that boldness because of widely available information flows, and then a way to genuinely opt out of the Federal Reserve's nonsense for those who deem it to be nonsense. Bitcoin is not immune from price or exchange rate volatility. It won't ever be. And it has its issues. But having access to your money when it all hits the fan is a wonderful thing. And it is also a wonderful thing that Bitcoin's monetary policy is known and predictable. And the madness will continue. People have been ridiculous since forever. This won't change. But now that we have ways to educate people of their options, together we can opt out, as the educational process for Bitcoin is literally at the tip of everyone's fingers. Yes, there's propaganda. And yes, there are far too many sensationalist claims about what Bitcoin can solve. But there really are a lot of genuinely good information flows for Bitcoin education. In all, the true value of Bitcoin lies herein. Regular people using Bitcoin because our ubiquitous information flows taught them about it as a mechanism to opt out from the decisions of central banks will not make central banks behave more responsibly. Instead, it will simply offer a tool and a means to stand up to central bank decisions in more concrete ways than through mean words posted to social media sites. Bitcoin can separate money from the state, but that need not make the state or its central bank behave responsibly. It doesn't matter. Bitcoin doesn't care. You can opt out. This article is featured in Bitcoin Magazine's The Withdrawal Issue. This show was brought to you by Nodeless.io. Now, I had somebody shoot me a message the other day, thanking me for telling them about Nodeless. I cannot remember which. I'm still looking through it. I want to find it. And I would love to call you out by name, whoever it was. But they thanked me for letting them know about Nodeless because they were able to set it up and it was just kind of exactly the solution they were looking for. It was simple. Like, it takes no time at all to set up. You can plug it right into WooCommerce and you literally just accept Bitcoin and Lightning on your website. And it's the shortest path that I know from not accepting Bitcoin on your website, on your charity, on your fundraiser, literally whatever you are doing online to provide value or request funds. If you want to accept Bitcoin and Lightning without any management, easily, cheaply, and without any KYC or, you know, long-term subscription that you have to know that you're going to be using this a ton or be concerned if you don't use it enough, that you're sick of services that require you to take a selfie with your ID and write the date on a piece of paper, if you would rather just avoid all of that and want to just set up accepting Bitcoin and Lightning to your service or to your website in just a matter of minutes, where it just works and you get the Bitcoin in your cold storage, it is just sent to you automatically, you should check out Nodeless. And if you want 10,000, I actually just went through some messages while I was looking for that other conversation. I went through a bunch of messages and I caught like four people who sent me the Nodeless donation address or donation link from their Nodeless page and shot them all 10,000 sats. So if you want 10,000 sats for free, I'm still doing this. I might not do it much longer because I've burned through a lot of sats, but I'm still offering 10,000 sats to anyone who wants to go to nodeless.io/guy. My link, I mean, you'll find it right in the show notes. So just go to the description. Click on that, take the three steps, whatever it is, to set up a donation page, and then send me the public link. Post it on socials, post it on Noster, tag me, and you will get 10,000 of Guy's sats. Link, again, in the show notes. Check them out. So, George Kaloudis, I really enjoyed this article, and I go back and forth on how I think this thesis plays out. And there's a lot of interesting points. See, I don't know. I would have to be. I think one thing that this article could benefit from is more clarity on what he sees as the argument that the Federal Reserve will be fixed by Bitcoin. That Bitcoin will make them, quote unquote, behave more responsibly. And I say that because I don't disagree with any of his response to the claim as he is positioning it. Like I think his framing is correct from his premise. But I've said and made the argument before in the past that the Federal Reserve will quote unquote be reined in thanks to Bitcoin. But when I say that, I don't mean it in the way that his premise suggests. So I think I'm arguing it from a different perspective. And that's why I agree with the way this article frames it. But I don't agree on a longer term scale why and how it, quote unquote, makes the Federal Reserve behave more responsibly. And honestly, still in a different, even in kind of a third argument or a third mental model, is that it still doesn't do that at all, because really more than anything, it just kind of makes the Federal Reserve entirely unsustainable as a system. But if anybody thinks that, you know, it fixing the Federal Reserve means that the Federal Reserve is going to come out and say, oh, we're changing our monetary policy because Bitcoin doesn't allow us to do this, or because Bitcoin is threatening our monetary or our dominance or whatever, then I completely agree. I don't think that's at all likely. And for exactly why Kalutis broke down, is that's literally just giving legitimacy to Bitcoin. Like, that's one of my favorite quotes from this one. On the point that Bitcoin does not yet have any legitimacy as a threat to the U.S. dollar, quote, so it follows that the U.S. government or the Federal Reserve will never admit Bitcoin is a threat to the U.S. dollar hegemony, because that admission would grant Bitcoin status as a credible threat. And I think that is spot on, because I really think the framing of the overwhelming majority of people is that Bitcoin isn't even in the same playing field. Like, the Bitcoin has like just this corner notched out where it's this other thing that you can do on the stock market. It doesn't really do anything, but it's like some sort of technologically advanced internet points. For some reason, it's the future, and a lot of people are talking about it. So for the U.S. government or the Federal Reserve, even if it was true, even if it was insanely true, like this was imminent, and, you know, we're talking about a $10 or $20 trillion market cap for Bitcoin, and there was something fundamentally happening that was forcing the Federal Reserve's hand to change its monetary policy, they will never admit it. The worst possible thing they could do would be to admit or acknowledge publicly that Bitcoin was acting in their sphere of influence and was undermining their ability to control their population, to inflate the money, to change their monetary policy and actually have an effect on the economy. But that's why I think on a long-term timescale, when we're talking about a $10 to $20 trillion market cap, when we're talking about the progression of Bitcoin into a monetized asset, into a major, a dominant monetary player. But before it's getting there, it's going to chip away. See, the reason the Federal Reserve can get away with what it gets away with is because it has such a massive amount of control, of ubiquity throughout the economic markets, throughout the economic system, that if they make a change, there's simply not a valve big enough for the pressure to release. Thus, they can essentially manipulate the entirety of the system. So think about it like a huge dammed up reservoir. And there's, you know, there's a huge dam around this thing. And in the dam, there's only like a handful of really small pipes that let the water out. Well, the Federal Reserve, because this is the global economy, and the dollar is the water and the dam. And there's no currency, there's no major value mechanism big enough to remove any pressure from that reservoir. If the Federal Reserve dumps like 100 billion more gallons of water into the reservoir, those little pipes, yes, some people will be able to get out, some people will be able to protect themselves, but there's not enough liquidity with the transfer of water for the bulk of people to not be influenced by the change in the water, to the change in the pressure, in the amount of flooding. Like, everybody's stuck. If we can distribute some of that water, well, then we can prevent the Federal Reserve from having the effect it wants. But what you need is a massive amount of capital flow. You need a huge water exit from the reservoir you need an exit door. And it's like everybody's stuck in a giant concert hall and there's one exit door. If you make that exit door bigger, everyone can get out of the concert hall much quicker. So if you're trying to gas everybody in the concert hall, you have one little door where people can only file through like three crammed together. Well, then you could put poisonous gas in the room and kill most of the people. And in the context of inflation or monetary policy, you can affect the buying habits, the ability for anyone to save, to protect their savings from the inflation, the ability for people to find alternative markets with a different interest rate or with real capital expenses and not participate in the imbalances of the fiat system to basically protect themselves from its influence. That's the crowd getting gassed in the theater because there's not a big enough. I mean, all of the rails of finance and money in the entire world basically run on the dollar. And one of the points that he made that a lot of people haven't caught, because it's interesting that there's so much geopolitical uncertainty in the kind of the dollar or kind of the U.S. hegemony without it really being seen as an effect in the dollar market. And it's because the dollar still remains better than all of the alternatives. And since everybody's kind of collapsing at once in this really weird, the world is devolving into chaos era that we are in, the dollar's weakness isn't super relevant to the dollar's demise, because all of the even relevant sized exits of, you know, to release that pressure are all worse. It's kind of like if that theater had just like two big exit doors where a lot of people could flow through. So, you know, going back to the analogy, if you just had like an open wall, probably most people wouldn't be killed by the poison. They could hold their breath really quick and they could all get out. Well, in the context of fiat money, the analogy would go something like, there's a bunch of theaters stuck onto each other. There's one giant theater and then there's two smaller theaters, but there's at least a pretty big wide door between those theaters. Except that the big theater, the dollar theater, has mild poison gas in it. But the other theaters have like worse poison gas in it. So the flow from the smaller theaters back into the big one, everybody's pointing out that there's poison in the big theater, but everybody from the shitty, the worst theaters where people are literally dying are still just running into the less poisonous theater. This is a weird analogy, but I hope it at least illustrates the point. So when George brings up that Bitcoin just isn't big enough, it's not really relevant on that battlefield, so to speak, is because it's still just got a really small door. It just doesn't have the liquidity. I mean, BlackRock talks about like the fact that they're buying some and maybe they're trying to get like a million coins. I don't even know. And like, look what the price has done. Like, it's crazy volatile because the marginal trade is really, really small. And most people are literally just holding onto it and stacking slowly for the long term. Or at least that seems to be what's indicated both by the ethos of the typical Bitcoiner and the more generic on-chain data about like exchange balances and stuff. Like, people are just buying and saving. So why would I argue, like, what would the argument be in the reverse? If the Federal Reserve is obviously never going to admit that that Bitcoin has any effect whatsoever on their monetary policy, or that they are even in the same playing field, which they will still attack it for climate change and for, you know, funding Hamas or whatever stupid thing that they can make up. And that will be because of all the different interests that are being disrupted. The banks that no longer have control over where people are sending funds, the deposits that are leaving and going into Bitcoin, the payments that are no longer paying fees to Visa and MasterCard, et cetera, et cetera. All of these separate interests will do whatever they can to stop Bitcoin, unless it appears in the short term they can make more money off of integrating Bitcoin. And then you'll have different parts of the industry fighting each other. Some people will adopt it, some people won't. It will be the incumbents that won't, because they don't want to change and they don't want to give up the position and the power and the control and the surveillance that they've always had, and that was getting better and better until Bitcoin came along. And so they will lobby their asses off, and there will be a great save the world from all the evil terrorist bill that says you can't withdraw your Bitcoin, whatever the hell it is. They'll come up with a dumb fucking excuse and some narrative, because that's the way this shit works. It's just incumbents trying to cement their position by playing a political narrative that everybody is convinced, and all the politicians get filthy, filthy rich, trading off of everything that's happening and taking favors, critical positions in the infrastructure and in the corporations, and, you know, cycling through that revolving door between corporate CEO and regulator. They will attack it, but the central bank will never be on board with admitting that they are being limited by Bitcoin. However, at some point, the flow, the liquidity in Bitcoin and the size of Bitcoin will get to a point that when they make a bad policy decision, or a policy decision that the information flows indicate to enough people with enough capital that this is going to be bad for them, that their yield is being cut, that inflation of their capital flows is at risk, they will exit out the big door into clean air. And this will act as a counterbalancing force to the Fed's decisions having any effect on the economy. And in fact, likely what will happen is that Bitcoin will enable the economy to actually get around it as it becomes big enough, and the Fed will take credit
They will say that look how great the economy has done and look how quickly it recovered and look how we're back to robust growth. And it will literally be in spite of all of the decisions that they made. But them and whoever dumbasses in the presidential seat at that time will do everything they can and slap up every dumbass chart that they can find to make it look like they were responsible for things getting better. It will have nothing to do with them, and they will never admit that Bitcoin stopped them from doing something that would have hurt and instead fixed their disaster. But that flow of capital, that ability to opt out, our ability to just protect our earnings and our wealth and our economic condition from the manipulation of that system. See, the cool thing is that those zombie companies that are, you know, being overly financialized and becoming quote unquote smart investments, those things will not be so incorrectly priced or will not trend imbalanced in Bitcoin terms. They will only be affected by dollar terms because it is explicitly the manipulation of the supply in the accounting system that allows them to make it appear as if those investments were good decisions. The analogy I like to make on that financialization is that it just opens up so much investment resources to be wasted, time and labor to be wasted in this area of the economy in which things actually aren't beneficial, things actually aren't profitable, and there's no value being net created, it's being net destroyed, is like saying, like, if a perfectly sound money was a pristine glass of water, and therefore only things better than just clean water are worthy of investment or risk, is coffee, tea, soda, whatever it is. If you then just dump mud in the water, well, now it appears profitable, and it seems like a really smart decision to invest in just kind of muddy water, maybe just some hazy water. In fact, the return on hazy water, if you just invest enormous amounts of capital, you can probably get from dirty, shitty water to hazy water really, really quick and cheaply. Therefore, we should take all of this capital that we had reserved for tea and coffee and just put it all into hazy water. That is essentially what has happened to our financial system when the money is manipulated to completely obscure what the risk and cost of capital really is. And so the only sense in which it will quote unquote, Bitcoin will quote unquote, rein in the Federal Reserve is when it simply there's enough capital allocated to it, and it's a large enough part of the global monetary system that people simply don't have to be subject. You know, the ability to inflate the currency away doesn't work if you don't have all of these people stuck in the dollar system to take the value from. If everybody can just exit, well, then your ability to limit the size of your network directly affects the ability to print and manipulate the money supply and not have it have enormous, obvious effects on the dollar market economy and dollar prices of all the goods. So maybe the only way that it reins in the Federal Reserve is that it eventually puts them out of business. Because just like FTX and Mt. Gox and Alameda and hundreds of other companies in the Bitcoin space have proved, fiat business practices and fiat insolvencies don't work in the Bitcoin space. They last what? Maybe a year? Those are fiat practices applied to Bitcoin. That is what happens when you try to play the game of fiat financing and derivatives and leverage on top of an asset that can be withdrawn in a matter of minutes, and you cannot, under any circumstances, create more of it. You simply go out of business. So if the Federal Reserve is left holding the bag for the treasury bond market, at the end of all of this, and people can exit through the Bitcoin door, and the Bitcoin door keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, that simple ability to opt out will, in fact, stop the Federal Reserve from behaving in the way that they have always behaved, one way or another. But Kaloudis is right. They will never admit it. They will do everything they can to ignore it and call it something else in this other world with this other thing and some internet technology, and or try to take as much credit for the results of Bitcoin as possible. But it will, nonetheless, in the end and in the long run, ruin all of their plans. And that is great news. So a huge thank you to Kaloudis for this piece.
This was really fun. And it's also one of those great titles that's like, it immediately called me. You got me. You did it. And it was a really fun article. I always like the, I like that natural writing. I get tired of the overly technical stuff. I mean, not that I don't love it. I love anything that's just like a really great argument. But I really liked his writing style. It was a very refreshing read. So also kudos to that. And a shout out to Bitcoin Magazine for having just a bunch of great stuff. Really good selection of articles lately, and a lot of things that I have been trying to keep up with were easy because I just saw an article about them right on the front page of Bitcoin Magazine. So fewer places to have to check to find the stuff that I'm looking for. That's always great. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. We will close this one out. Do not forget to check out Nodeless. I will throw you 10,000 sets. I will zap it in your general direction if you make a donation page and tag me in socials so that I can see it. And tag Nodeless too, or UTXO on Noster. Let's give them a shout out at the same time. And also the Cold Card hardware wallet to keep those sats safe after I send them to you. And then grab yourself a Fold debit card and the Fold app if you just want to be getting sats back on literally everything that you do. It is a no-brainer. All of these great things will be available right in the show notes. Don't forget to check out prodcast.io. If you're looking for any of the things that I recommend, the books, the products and stuff, right now it is only the books, but I do recommend books from time to time. You may not be aware, but I read stuff sometimes. So Prodcast is a really cool app that actually tracks all of it. It just uses AI to catch when I recommend a book, and then it puts it on this thing. So I don't have to kind of keep track of like, oh, I'll have the link in the show notes. They'll all be on prodcast.io. That's really cool. And they're going through my episode history to kind of find them all. So I thought this was really neat, and it's a really cool way to support the show because you're looking for my recommendations that I give, and it adds like a couple bucks. It's not the cheapest place that you can buy it. You can always find it somewhere else, but it's like a way to, you know, give value for value to the show because I recommended a book that you were interested in. So that link will be in the show notes as well. And thank you so much for listening. I will be back. We are going to have another AI Unchained episode soon, so keep an eye out there. Sorry, I've kind of have some big gaps over there. Just been trying to get a lot of things through the schedule, and now that my computer is up and running, I've had a lot of fun to start playing around with things more in depth, and I'm going to have a lot of fun stuff to share. So check that one out. Don't forget to subscribe, and I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. Until then, everybody, opt out and take it easy. You only live once, but if you do it right, once is enough. Mae West.